Welcome to this podcast from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, exploring aspects of our life and witness at this time.
Welcome to the PCI podcast. In this episode, we will be picking up the theme of sharing our faith and growing in confidence in doing so in what's a very changing environment to speak about the gospel. I'm David Thompson, hosting the conversation, and it's great to have Philip Houston, Phyllis Linton and Neil Harrison on the podcast today as we wrestle with this very real issue for us, both as congregations and members going out into our everyday lives. So why don't you all introduce yourselves and tell us a bit about what you do and the church that you're a part of, starting with you, Philip.
Thanks, David. Yeah, so my name's Phil. I belong to Ballykelly Presbyterian Church up in the Northwest. I'm the minister there and have been so since August of last year, so about not quite a year and a half yet. Still fairly new, and we're the church is in a village of Ballykelly, and our congregation is sort of half and half farming and non-farming. Myself, I'm not a farmer. I'm from the Rathcoole Estate in Newton Abbey, so this is a new world for me up here in the last year or so, but enjoying it so far.
David, my name's Phyllis. I was, until recently, about 3 years ago, the deaconess in West Church, and I was there for about 31 years. And the place is so amazing, I stayed on when I retired, which is very unusual for deaconesses to do these days. But it was just what I felt God was saying to David, my husband, and I to do. And it's worked out very well. Obviously, my role has changed dramatically in that, and I'm now back sitting in the pew with everybody else, and trying to find wee ways to help that mean I'm not intruding among the staff and that, which is working out really well, and it's lovely, and the congregation are very good to me in that. Now that I'm retired, I have so much free time. You wouldn't believe it. No, I don't. I've managed to fill all that free time, but one of the things that I've put into it is I have volunteered a day in the week in the International Meeting Point in Belfast, and I just love it. It's brilliant. It's something very different to what I did in my job every day. I'm now helping people to learn English with a great Ballymena accent. So they've learned the word we very well, and quite a lot of the guys will now say we to me. So I spend a day in the week there doing that. And the other amazing thing it's done is opened up people who want to talk about faith from 20 to 30 different countries, from different faiths, things that I have never really encountered before. And that's become a challenge for me to think about how to do that, but also just to learn how much they share and show me each day of the week as well.
Brilliant. And it's a refreshing thing to remember that we're all learners in this, aren't we, all the time? And that there's no easy way to speak about Jesus. It really requires us to think about people's stories. And I'm sure we'll get into all that later on. Neil, over to you. Tell us a bit about you and your job and your church.
Yeah, I'm Neil Harrison, the Congregational Witness Development Officer here in Assembly Buildings. I've been in this role for just over 4 years. And it's just encouraging to be out and about in different congregations and helping people to think about what mission might look like in their local context, as well as providing some resourcing as well. I live in Warringstown and attend Warringstown Presbyterian with my wife and children. And yeah, that's home for us.
Great. So let's get right into our theme and our topic for today. And I'm going to start with you, Neil, because we can all see and sense that the culture we live in has changed significantly over the past couple of decades. And that really impacts on receptivity to the Christian faith. Can you describe some of those changes and explain why they might require a different approach to evangelism?
I think it's hard for anyone to disagree with the statement that the society we live in has changed in recent decades. You know, we live in a more secular society, which basically means that the biblical values and beliefs that were accepted for generations are no longer dominant, and indeed are rapidly fragmenting. And we see this in all aspects of society, such as education and healthcare and politics. Interest in the Christian faith and church attendance has been declining for many years. The number of Presbyterians attending congregations in PCI has almost halved in the last 50 years. And in the same time period, according to the most recent census data for Northern Ireland, the number of people who describe themselves as having no religion has more than doubled. Against this backdrop, then, it's helpful, I think, sometimes to think generationally about the distance of people's relationship to the Christian faith and church. So imagine a scenario where two adults and their children, they go to church and, you know, nearly everyone has a good background of knowledge of the faith because they're there on a Sunday. And you can picture people like that in your congregation. And we'll call that Generation One. But when those Generation One children grow up and they stop going to church, but they still send their children, you know, maybe along to Sunday school or maybe along to the BB. So everyone in the family still has some knowledge of the basics of the faith. And that would be Generation Two. But when the Generation Two children grow up, they neither go to church themselves and nor do they send their children. So the adults, they still have some limited kind of remembrance of the Christian faith because they went to Sunday school or things like that. But their children have none. They have no experience of what church is like. And that would be Generation Three. And then when those Generation Three children grow up, nobody in the family goes to church and no one knows anything about the basics of the Christian faith. And that would be Generation Four. And typically across Ireland, there are increasing numbers of unreached people in our lives that fall into Generations Three and Four, where they have little or no knowledge of the Christian faith or of church. And with that in mind, then it's clear to see that the distance that people need to travel, not geographically, but distance kind of regarding their knowledge of the gospel and their experience of church, is often greater than we realize. And that's why we need to consider different approaches and be prepared that someone's journey to faith can actually take years, which is probably more than maybe we've been used to in the past.
Yeah, I think we can all kind of picture some of the people that you've been talking about in those generations. And those sort of changes often make us really anxious and maybe cause us to want to just retreat from sharing our faith and have that fear about it. So, Phyllis, what do you think is the biggest fear that stops people sharing their faith with others? And how have you sought to overcome that fear?
I think even from personal experience, I know even when I became a teenager and I became a Christian when I was 14, by my late teens, I struggled in the job that I was in. I was working in the government. And even just working, even at that point, with people from a very secular background, from very different backgrounds to what I grew up in church, you suddenly began to realise this is a different world, even at that stage. And it's changed markedly, as we've just discovered listening to Neil. And at that point, I think I did share my faith a bit. And they knew I was a Christian. I never hid that in any way with them. And largely, you have to say they did respect that. But it was difficult. And you realised people weren't always prepared to listen. And I think the fear for me in many ways was that I personally thought, what happens if you make somebody cross in this, you know? And occasionally people were a bit upset and I thought I was reasonably gentle in how I did it. But people could get offended because things that you believed as a Christian, they just didn't believe or even begin to accept. And that was difficult. And that did put me off in some ways. Nobody actually laughed at me. And I have to say, nobody shouted at me. And, you know, parishioners over the years would have said to me, Phyllis, I'm worried somebody will shout at me or they'll laugh at me or they'll ridicule me in front of all my mates at school or uni or wherever I am. And I think those things particularly are the fears that people have. I think as well there's a perception of evangelism that for me took me a long time to come to terms with, because I saw evangelism as Billy Graham. I saw it as a guy in the street, and the number of my parishioners who said to me, well, that's evangelism, I don't do that. That's not for me. And they immediately write off evangelism because of it. But also I think people will say to me, what if they ask me a question I don't know how to answer? I think that's maybe the biggest fear for most people. And over the years, I suppose the way I've overcome that one for me is to say to people, do you know what? That's a brilliant question. And sometimes I ask them a question then and say to them, look, do you mind before I answer the question or try to answer it? Would you tell me why you're asking it? Because often that just in itself, and that has helped me overcome that particular one. But I think when I became a deaconess, you know, any time in the past when I wouldn't have shared my faith, there was nowhere to hide. This is my job. These people are paying me every month to sit here and do exactly that. And part of me had to come to terms with that, with God, and stop running in it. And I think the way that I did that is the way that everybody can use. I just sat down and I prayed. And I just poured out my heart to the Lord and I said, Lord, I want to do this every day and I'm scared. Some of these people I identify with easily and some of them I don't. And Lord, I'm scared just what I'll do to relationships in my congregation if I start sharing my faith with people in a very active way, in ways that maybe they haven't always been used to over the years. And God just simply said something very simple to me. He said to me, Phyllis, your job is only to talk about me. The rest's my problem. I'll deal with that. I'll deal with bringing them to faith and I'll deal with helping them understand what you actually said. And I think the second thing God said to me was he reminded me very strongly, you're not doing this on your own, pet. You're not out there on your own every day. I'm with you every step, every conversation. I know all about this person far more than you do. So why don't you just trust me to do what I'm going to do? But that meant for me in practical terms, and I think this is for me the most important thing, you pray. You pray before you talk to people. You pray at the start of a day and you say, Lord, who are we going to meet today? And I don't just mean in the course of our work when we work for church. I view when I go to my hairdresser, when I go to the supermarket or I go to get petrol or I go to the shop, that in all of those places, I'm saying, Lord, who are we meeting today? And will you just give me the common sense to know what to say, when to listen, when to say a little bit, and remember that they don't need the whole cake at once. They can have one piece of it and the rest will come at some other stage.
That's great. Thank you for that. That I think a lot of people will just resonate with the whole idea of needing to pray. And as much as we sometimes think it's about technique or what we need to know most of all that God's with us and before us in his work. Phil, what would you say to that?
Yeah, I would agree really with everything that Phyllis has said there. I mean, I think one of the biggest fears that probably has always been there is the fear of rejection. And since we're teenage boys, those of us on the call who are in that stage, you know, that's always been the greatest fear in life, hasn't it? To take the risk and be rejected. But I think now, just even going from what Neil was saying earlier and the change that's going on, it's maybe the fear has gone beyond simple embarrassment, but to be told that you're just wrong and to be rejected, not just your message to be rejected, but to be rejected as a person completely because of what we say and what we believe. And that seems to be a fear that's grounded in what we see round about us and in the media and stuff. You know, the people are just turned away wholesale because of some things they've said. And I think too, maybe another fear is that, you know, we see particular expressions maybe of evangelism that are not in line with our own personality. So maybe they're very confrontational or belligerent. And sometimes people are rejected because of who they are and how they are, maybe rather than the message they have. And there can be a real fear that we don't want to be that guy. So we'll do the opposite. And sometimes that means we don't maybe speak when we should. I have to say that I'm not over that fear of rejection yet. And I wish I was. But it's something that I still would struggle with. It does at times stop me from saying what I think I should say at the time I should say it. And it's very frustrating. But just going off the back of what Phyllis was saying there too, I think it's remembering that we're not on our own. You know, Jesus himself said, I will be with you. And he means that, and it's true. And we could really do with reminding ourselves of that often. And then the big thing is that, you know, we talk about sharing our faith and sharing the gospel. That's all about grace, isn't it? You know, and like I say things in the wrong way a lot. I sometimes say the wrong thing or don't say anything, and yet grace still applies to me. And so when I remember that well at the start of or during these conversations with folk, it emboldens me to say something and to trust that the Lord will give me the words or will make up for my shortcomings, or will forgive me if I make a mess of it. And that helps. It doesn't make it easy, but maybe one day it will. But I think knowing that Jesus is right there with us is an incredible encouragement.
Well, again, that's very honest and very helpful, and just reminds us right at the start of what we're talking about, that all of this revolves around God and the gospel, which we need to never lose sight of. One of the things that all these changes can spark in us is a sense that God can't really change lives anymore. And we do need to hold on to the fact that God still transforms people's lives in an instant, and can do that through a conversation or just the right thing at the right time. But often we hear that someone's journey to faith has taken a very long time. These days, it's taken years. It's been bit by bit. So what advice might you give to listeners on how they can accompany people on that journey, and particularly in ways that go beyond just being nice? Because one of the things we do in church as well, when we're a wee bit frightened about sharing the message, is we decide we're just going to be nice to people rather than tell them the truth of what God says. So how do we accompany people on a journey in ways that go beyond being nice, to nudge them towards actually considering how faith in Christ might have something to offer their lives? Phil, do you want to go first on that one?
Yeah, well, Phyllis had a great phrase there, didn't she, earlier about not giving them the whole cake. And I think that does take the pressure off things, because I think at times when you're around churches and Christians a lot, we pick up these phrases and sort of shorthand ways of saying things, which mean deep things to us, but maybe don't mean very much to other people. And if we think that evangelism is simply getting those phrases out and sort of like a magic spell, kind of sprinkling them over people from a distance and hitting every mark in that regard, then I think we've missed really what evangelism is and what sharing our faith is. It's much deeper than that, and often much slower than that, and sometimes more frustrating as well. But I think, again, with the risk of maybe repeating myself a bit, we need to know the gospel ourselves, and not just which words to say, but to know what it is deep in our hearts, to know that we live by grace, that we are people of hope, that we're children of a generous God. All of that in its completeness is what the gospel is. And if we want to share the gospel, it's got to be more than just words. It certainly has to include words, but it's got to be more than that. So I would say the first thing, going back to the cake, you know, is not to panic about saying everything all the time. That's not our role, but to move alongside people, to connect with them, you know, to sit with them in their grief maybe, and show them that we don't despair because we have the gospel, to be generous towards people, even though we don't have a lot, but to be generous with our time and with our money or different resources, because we have a generous God and that's who he is. And so therefore that's who we are. And then, as been said already, to remember that God's the one that saves. I mean, he is the one that is doing this work. So if we have to go slowly because he's decided it's going to be slow, then we'll go slow. If he decides to transform people in an instant, then we'll glory in that and we'll revel in it and we'll enjoy it because that's what he has decided. I think for me, a helpful picture is, you know, the story of the friends that carried their paralyzed buddy to Jesus and lowered him down through the roof. You know, there was more than one of them. They all had to lift a bit of that that blanket or whatever it was and carry him. They all had to get the dirt under their fingernails and scraping away at the roof. And they worked together. The church is big, so we work together in this. It's not my job to save a person. We do it collectively. When we're doing it, we're bringing, just as those friends did, they brought their friend to Jesus, and that's what we do. We're just trying to point people towards Jesus, trying to nudge them towards him, because he's the one ultimately that will make the difference and make the transformation in their lives. Be patient, but be consistent and be gospel-centered. Live it out. I think particularly in those times when people are in deep trouble, the temptation is for us all to say, oh, this is awful and there's no hope. To be able to sit in those situations, not to preach, but just to say, I am not hopeless here. I am not despairing, because God is in my life and he redeems all things. that sort of journeying with people, I think, is helpful.
Great. Thank you, Phyllis. Slice the cake for us here. What are the different ways we can accompany people? What are the different slices of that look like in your experience?
I think the different slices, the first thing is a relationship. You have to know people. And I think one of the things that takes the fear out of evangelism as well for me is that you work in a circle of people you know already. You know, we're not going to run down the street and accost somebody in the street. Occasionally I meet somebody in a cafe or somewhere, and I'm drawn to go and say good morning to them, even though I don't know them. And that can open conversations. But even in that initial conversation, often people look as if they're not happy and something's wrong. And I'll say, are you okay? And they'll start to tell me that, and I'll leave that, and I hope I meet them again. So it's taking your time. I think very much what Phil was saying, take your time, one bit at a time. And that's the first thing. Be patient. Be patient with people. And share a little bit of the cake today, whatever that little bit of the cake is. It might just be opening up, you know, do you have faith? It may be that sometimes one of the things I would have used was, if people had said to me, Phyllis, I'm going through a rough time, or this is wrong, or something's wrong, out of that, I would say to them, well, let me pray for you. That's the first thing. And after I've prayed for them, then I would open the conversation with them. Do you ever pray for yourself? What do you think prayer actually does? Do you think what I've just done will make any difference? And that's the first opening, to see where are people actually in faith? Do they believe in God? Is he active in their life in any way? And it's just those little things that you need to do with people, and take your time. And even though people may sit and just listen, either politely or not, it takes time. And certainly my experience over the years, 90% of the people that I have sat beside coming to faith, I can tell you, hasn't been in the first year. It could be 2 years, it could be 5 years. I mean, I'll tell you a story. I had a gentleman who for about 15 years I shared faith with. And he was absolutely gorgeous. He was lovely. He was a wee sweetheart. And he would just smile at me ever so nicely and say, that's lovely, Phyllis, but it's not for me. And he never would tell me quite why. And I, at one point, came home in utter frustration, I have to be honest. And I think I became like the psalmist. And I sat down and I folded my arms to God and I said to him, I've had enough. I'm not talking to that man anymore about this because I'm wasting my breath. And I just said, Lord, you know that parable of the growing seed in Mark 4, where I'm expected to share the seed. And whether I'm awake or asleep, you're still working. Well, Lord, would you do your work? Because I can't. It's got to be the Holy Spirit that changes this man. And I just left it. And then I got a phone call. He was in the hospital. I went down to the hospital, sat down beside him. He was out for the count. So I took his wee hand, rubbed his hand and wakened him up so that I wouldn't give him the shock of his life. And he opened his eyes. And the first thing that man said to me was, Phyllis, how do I become a Christian? Well, I nearly fell off my chair because I thought, I've spent 15 years doing this and you have not responded. And he said to me, 4 weeks ago, you came to visit. And when you were sitting with me, Phyllis, my neighbour was in just after an hour and a quarter and you went home and I wanted to ask you and I didn't. And today I'm saying to you, Phyllis, tell me how to become a Christian. Can we do it now? And that's just proof, really, that God does his work. It's let him do it and take it slowly with people. A year and a half later, that man's wife came to the Lord because she saw the difference in her husband. And this was a couple in their 80s. And I think, like Phil said, the key is be with people through the mountains and valleys of life, because there's lots of valleys for lots of people, particularly at the minute. Help people in those practical ways. I've lit fires, I've gone for coffee, I've fetched the prescriptions. Do whatever it takes to be that person's friend, because until we actually love them, do you know what? We're not going to do anything with them. Because we need to actually love people. And I think part of evangelism is remembering. Jesus said, go and fish. He didn't say, go and hunt. And sometimes some of the evangelism we see is hunting. I love to build relationships with people. And I can guarantee you, after 30 years in ministry, that you build relationships, God will open those doors.
Great, thanks for that. Neil, anything to add?
Not loads to add, but to elaborate on a few things that both Phyllis and Phil have shared already. I think, you know, it's a relational work that we're talking about here, as Phyllis has said. And so it is helpful for people even just to pause and think about who is around your life that is not a Christian. You know, is that within your family, your friends, your neighbours or your work colleagues? Those are the kind of four groups that I would be encouraging people to think about. Who is around your life that is not a Christian? Who are you connecting well with? Who seems to be open to your friendship? And really take time to intentionally notice the people who are around your life, because a relationship with a Christian is often a highly significant part of someone's journey to faith. And then pray for those people, pray for how you will interact with them. Ask God to show you, how can I be a blessing in this person's life? And that actually leads us to be more invested in someone's life. It encourages us to be more loving, to be kind in practical ways, as Phyllis has kind of alluded to already. And I think listening is really important. Listening to people with genuine care, with genuine interest and empathy. Don't always kind of run into offering our own opinions on their situations, but just take time to really understand their reality and walk in their shoes a little bit. And then ask good questions is really important. Trying to be curious and draw people into deeper conversations about their lives, about what their hopes are, what their hurts have been. Through good questions, that really gives us the time and space to deepen our relationship with people, to deepen that level of trust. And often actually those questions will be reciprocated. And that gives us the opportunity just to talk about our own faith and about how our faith shapes and influences our life and makes a difference. And so these practices, they're like relational, but they really will help us to grow and deepen that level of trust in a friendship. But if I am the only Christian in my friend's life, then I am their weird Christian friend. And so as Phyllis has also alluded to, it's helpful to look then for opportunities to invite them along to social gatherings or informal spaces around the life of the church where they can meet and build friendships with other Christians, because that reduces the weirdo factor. Because I'm not the only person who believes all this stuff in their life. And it actually starts to make the Christian faith a little bit more believable to them. And it begins to open up opportunities to share about the difference that Jesus makes in your life. And it opens up opportunities then, I think, to invite them along to church or to invite them along to maybe an evangelistic course like an Alpha or Christianity Explored, where they can begin to think about these things a little bit more because they are interested and intrigued by that.
That's really helpful and moving us towards the next bit of the conversation, which is around what can congregations do in terms of helping with evangelism. So often one of the things that they do is just encourage their members to do the kind of things that we've said you need to be doing, or think the way we need to be thinking about the opportunities to reach others. But what about more than that? How can a congregation be helpful in this faith journey that people are taking towards Jesus? How can they kind of set up environments or run events that might be really significant in terms of just people moving people on in that journey towards the next stage of that? Any thoughts on that, Phyllis? You first, maybe?
I think it's difficult, and I don't think there's a congregation that's probably, in my experience over the years, have found all the answers. And that in itself is key for me, because I'm not sure that there's the same answer for everybody. I think part of it is you need to look at the area you live in, because your rural environment may be very different to what it is in the city or somewhere else. And the people that you're trying to build relationships may have a different lifestyle. Their timings may be different of when they're available, and you need to be aware of that. What are you actually organising that people are free to come to? It's determining as well, when the people that live in your area, what are the events that might attract them? Are they families? What attracts a family? Well, a family will need something that's for their children. I don't have children, but I do know this. If your kids are happy, you're happy. And so you need to target what is the actual important thing for people. What are they going to enjoy? This is not a process that we're bringing people in that's not pleasant. It's meant to be fun. It's meant to be the joy of the family of God. So let's do things that people actually really enjoy. And that may well be social things. And out of that, conversations and relationships develop. And then people maybe even meet for coffee outside that, which gives an even better opportunity for people, I think, to actually grow those relationships. For women, I notice, you know, things like coffee and craft are amazing. Women will come in. If there's coffee and there's chatting to be done, women will be there and they'll come. I mean, somebody recently asked me, could they come with me to a coffee and craft group with me? And I didn't even know this woman liked things like that. And she doesn't ever go to church. But I said, certainly, I'll pick you up and I take her with me. Well, out of that, one of the people in the group has now taken her into a floral art group. And she said to me recently, that girl has started to share her faith with me. And Phyllis, I haven't thought about my faith the way that I should have. And you know that. So things like that, simple little things. Well, let's just love people and be compassionate. And you know what? The rest, I think, will actually begin to follow.
Phil, any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, it's this word connect, isn't it? That's coming up time and time again. I was listening to somebody recently and they were encouraging us all to err on the side of connection. So if we weren't sure whether to have the conversation or drop in to the wake house or whatever it was, to do it, because it's always good to connect. And I think as congregations, we want to create opportunities. You know, if we are doing things as in groups or whatever, it's to create opportunities to connect. God has a way of putting the people he wants us to connect with in front of us. So let's connect with the people that are there and take those opportunities. So I would agree with Phyllis, lunch clubs, craft classes, things like that, you know, knit and natter and all that sort of thing. They're brilliant. But we also have groups. A lot of churches have groups already established. BB and GBs, their groups, PW, men's fellowship groups, all sorts of things, bowls, clubs, choirs. These are all groups where connections are possible. But we don't always maybe take the opportunity because we're content that people are there, they're in the building, they're doing our programs, that's enough. But we really want to connect person to person. And so we want to connect. And then I think, Phyllis, I think, was saying this too, we need to commit to them, to show up when things are tough. Or, you know, if we're doing youth work, to go to the school play that the kids are in, to go and hear their band play, you know, if it's age appropriate to do so, just to take an interest in them beyond what they can give us in sort of helping our groups run successfully, to really be committed to them. We want to connect and commit, but as congregations then, we want to just create opportunities to do that. And maybe there's existing opportunities there that we've just grown a bit tired because we've tried and it hasn't worked. And so we're giving up on those people. Let's not do that. But also we need to be willing, I think, just to do things for a time and then to do whatever helps us connect with the people around us now and to follow God's leading in the circumstances he puts us in to do that.
And I think part of that as well is, you know, what you just said, Phil, about following God's leading. You know, we need to set the bedrock of prayer on all of this in our congregations, that we are praying for these opportunities with people and to actually build and connect and do all the things that you say, which are brilliant. And that's what we need to do. And one of the things that I think for me, I think helps that is even just to have, if you have prayer triplets or a prayer meeting in your church, just to get those people involved. Get them involved praying actively about what we do and how we do it. And even with my own prayer triplet a couple of times, we've prayer walked the streets around West. Just gone for a walk and just wandered along with our hands in our pockets or a coffee in our hand. And sometimes one of them will just say, I'm going to stop here and pray at this door, don't know why. And we just say a prayer for whoever's in that house and just lay that groundwork of prayer out in the community.
Moving the conversation on another stage towards engaging with the Bible, one of the corollaries of what Neil was saying at the start about an increasingly secular society is that Generation 4 particularly don't really get the Bible or have no prior knowledge of it or experience of it, and it can look like a big daunting book to get into. So how can we help people who are on a journey towards faith to get to grips with the Bible, and how can we introduce God's word in ways that are accessible to them? Philip, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, it's just, I have no idea what corollary means, David. I can't even say it. Don't ask me to spell it. But the thing with this like you're saying, people don't have the same depth of Bible knowledge. That is definitely true, but it is not necessarily a disadvantage. If we can remind people or say to them for the first time that the Bible has something to say to every part of their life, it can be quite surprising for people. And people are often intrigued, I find anyway, that to hear what actually does this Bible say? Is it possible to have it explained or even to know what it says without having it explained, just to simply read it? Is it possible to have an unprejudiced view of this interesting book, if that's where they're coming at? And I have found, not universally, but I have found that people are relatively open to reading the Bible one-to-one. That can be a difficult thing to ask somebody to do. It can be a difficult thing. It can be a bit daunting even to do it ourselves. But to read the Bible with somebody and just say, this is what it says. Can we understand what it means? And to entrust in God to lead that conversation, to open it up, open them up to hear God's word.
Great. Phyllis, any quick thoughts on this one?
You know, like Phil, I agree, God's word works. And if we can come to the point, sometimes with people, even in funny circumstances, I was actually in a pub in Ballymena with people, as a gentleman I would have seen, that was the only place I could get him. And one of the guys one day was there on his own, and I sat beside him, and he opened up and talked stuff with me. And I read a story out of Mark to him. And I just said to him, could I tell you a story? I didn't actually even open my Bible. I just said, can I tell you a story that I think might resonate with you? And I told him one of the stories out of Mark. And he just looked at me and said, I could be that person. Is that what God would actually be with me? No, Jesus would never want me like that. You know, that was it. I just told him the story. But it's ideal if you can sit down and just read the story. And then without us explaining anything, just say to folk, is there anything about that story that resonates? And I remember a friend saying to me, she did this, and it was the story of Jesus healing the leper. And the person who was totally unchurched looked at her and said, you know, I could just imagine as you talked about that story, that Jesus took that person's hand. And he wasn't thinking about whether he'd get leprosy. He was just thinking about he loved him. And she was able then to say to the person, but the circumstances you're in, that's what Jesus will do with you. Take your hand too. Simple things.
Great. We've covered so much ground here. And Neil, I'm going to come to you to tell us a little bit more about something that PCI is running, and it's starting next month, to help explore and unpack today's theme a wee bit more, with a view to giving us a bit more confidence for sharing our faith in our everyday relationships. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, who's it's for, and how people can register to be a part of it?
Yeah, so it's a series of events called Sharing Your Faith, Growing in Confidence. And it's really pitched towards those who, you know, have a deep relationship with Christ. They're committed to the local church, but they find themselves a bit tongue-tied when they're talking about their faith with their friends, family, neighbours, etc. And so there's four gatherings. Two of those are in person and two of them will be online. And it's an interactive program to help people better understand the challenges for evangelism today, but also equip them with the confidence and that kind of conversational knack of being able to talk about the good news and the difference that it makes in their lives. So the first session, it talks about this idea of the starting point, where people are at, the knowing the landscape, a bit of some of the things that we talked about at the beginning of this podcast, that people appreciate the starting point of where people are at for evangelism today. The second session will be talking about story and how we can engage people through telling our own faith story and sharing the gospel story. The third session will be on that idea of conversation and how we can bring a faith perspective into everyday conversation that we have with people. And the fourth session will be thinking about how we can introduce people to the Bible and help them to see that that has relevance in their lives today. And the cost for the Sharing Faith events, which includes food at those two in-person sessions, is £25 per person. And the first one begins on Saturday, the 5th of February. You can register on the PCI website. And So if you'd like to attend, then please even think about encouraging a friend from your church to join with you and grow in confidence in sharing your faith together. We really would love to see more people coming along to this particular series of events.
Thanks, Neil. So that's something for everybody listening to have a think about and to see whether that's something that they could commit to at the moment and really get to grips with this challenge that we've been talking about today, but also that sense of God is with us in this and he can give us confidence as we put our faith in him to share our faith. I'd like to thank Phyllis and Phil and Neil for taking part, for their honesty with us, and also for the little things that they've said, the stories they've told that just help us to think more about sharing Jesus today and what that looks like and what that can mean for us. That's all for this episode. We've moved to a monthly schedule for podcasting now, and we hope that you'll tune in again next time when our focus will be on the challenges of following Jesus across the various stages and ages of life. Until then, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to a podcast from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. Thanks for joining us.